I came really late tonight. All right, here we go. Va'umeis kol buchar, pasuk hey says, pasuk hey, Rabbi Perek, Yud Aleph, chapter 11, pasuk hey, umeis kol buchar b'yaretz Mitzrayim, and every firstborn will die in the land of Egypt, mebuchar paro, from the firstborn of paro, ha'yoshev, who sits al kiso, ad buchar ha'shifcha, all the way into buchar ha'shifcha, asher, which is achar hori choyim, that is behind the millstone, v'chol buchar behemah, all the firstborns of the animals. Okay, so people don't know this. People don't really think about this. Is that the Makas Bechoros affected the firstborn of the animals? People don't remember that. People don't think about Makas Bechoros. They think, oh, who died? The firstborn of people. No, it's Beferish Pasuk. V'chol Bechor Behemo. Every firstborn animal also died in Makas Bechoros. Question is, where did they have animals? The Mepharshim don't ask the question, where did they have animals to die? Because though they ask that question when it comes to Barad. When it comes to Barad, they ask the question, so when it comes to Barad, where did they have animals? Because all the animals died by Dever. So where were their animals for Barad? So the question now is, where were their animals for Makas Bechoros? So I guess it has to be the people that it was a double leftover. This is a good topic of discussion. It was a double leftover. Animals that were left over from Barad, and animals that were left over from Dever, and animals that were left over from Barad. It was a double leftover that had to survive a double whammy in order to appear from Makas Bechoros.
Could be they kept the Bechor animals who were holy cows. So they kept him by the Jews in the barn or whatever. They protected him more.
I hear.
How many Bechoros were in the animals? Less than a lot of the animals being born. So a lot of animals died. But they were very special about the Bechorim because they worshipped them.
How do you know? Yeah.
So they kept
okay, no, they only worshipped the sheep. They only worshipped the sheep. I hear. I don't know. It's interesting. It's an interesting topic to see what we could find, dig up on this about the firstborn of the animals.
How do you know if it's a Bechor? An animal's a Bechor.
How do you know? I don't know. You keep records. Today in the industry, they probably.
Why would you keep a record of the first horse, the first donkey? Why would you keep a record?
Okay, so they wouldn't keep records.
You have a farm. You have a lot of donkeys.
Okay.
You have a lot of camels. Why would you keep a record of the Bechor? You're going to treat them differently?
Maybe you're saying they worshipped them. Maybe they did. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. You must have treated him differently. And they must have kept a tag on it. Maybe they put a pink or a string on it. Or a red string or something. And they valued them for some reason. Whatever it was, they valued them and kept them separately. And that's why they knew that the Bechoris would... If the animals were dying, then how do they know that the Bechor was dying? They must have had a sign to know that it was a Bechor.
But when it comes to the people, Rashi says later on, is that some women, Rashi says some women had five firstborns. How? Because they lived with...
From each husband.
No, they lived with men. They were married, and they had dealings with young men. And they became pregnant from these young men. So these young men, it was their firstborn child to the father. The Bechor is not only the firstborn to the mother. Makas Bechoros affected every type of firstborn. Whether it was the firstborn to the mother, firstborn to the father, anyone who was the firstborn died. So there was a unique situation. So maybe here by the animals also, it didn't necessarily mean the firstborn to the mother. Maybe it meant the firstborn to the father. I don't know. It says Bechor. Bechor doesn't say the Peterechem. Doesn't say.
Well, let me ask you something else. I'm asking, did a non-Bechor die too?
No, it says Beferish in the Pasuk. It says Beferish in the Pasuk, Ad Bechor Hashifcha Asher Achar Horeichaim V'chol Bechor Behema. It says the firstborn of animals.
Okay, which means if someone was not a Bechor, he didn't die.
Well, the definition of Bechor is a very broad definition. Rashi says in this parasha, when it came to the Egyptians...
Right, fine. Let's say a woman had 11 children. Let's say...
Okay.
She was married to one guy with 11 children.
Only the firstborn died. Oh.
Only one. So
only one died.
Stayed alive.
Only... Exactly. Correct. Right? Absolutely. Exactly. Exactly.
So she... You know, so she didn't find... If she was guaranteed 11 would live. Hara was very upset because he was a Bihar. His son was a Bihar. Maybe he had a dozen wives and each of them was a Bihar. And the Bihar was the one who got the Yerusha, who became a Paro. So if they would kill all the Bacharim, there would be no one to be continue the dynasty.
One more poet.
I hear what you're saying. Good. I hear what you're saying. I don't know the
I'm
answer.
I'm trying to do Pshuto Shomikra. This is what happened.
I hear what you're saying. You're saying very good. I don't know what to say. Okay, let's see Rashi. Rashi says, Umeisko Bukhavir is trying. Bukhar Par Bukhar 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 Shifcha Shachar. There are three different categories. Rashi says, Ad Bukhar Shvi. Lama Laku Hashavuyim. Why do we mention the firstborns of, why do we mention the firstborns of the Shavuyim, of the captives? Kidei shelo yoimu yirasam tava el bainam, vehivia puranus al mitzrayim, because they were abused. It seems Rashi here is coming to reveal to us an incredible chiddush that in Egypt there was discrimination. There was discrimination, and there was a segment of society that were captives, and they were treated like garbage. These people, and if they were not smitten, then they can argue that the God that destroyed the firstborns of Egypt was not the God of the Jewish people; it was the God of the captives. Okay, there was a pantheon. There were a lot of gods. Everyone had got all different types of gods. Okay, all different types
of...
What?
All snooze. They would stay blaming somewhere else.
Right, so they would say, so therefore, in order to show that it's only the God of the Jews and no one else, Nachmal Rashi, Lama Laku Hashvuyim, Kedei Shelo Yoimru, Yirasam, their deity, Tova Elboinam, demanded their Elboinam, their insult, Vehevia Puranus al Mitzroim. Okay, it has to be that there's a lot more going on here in this Rashi. There must be a very elaborate background to understand what this really means. When the gods of the captives, what does that mean exactly? Well, yeah, you can translate the pasuk. There's obviously something very, very complicated going on over here. And whatever, okay, we'll just read what it says here in the Rashi. Next, Mebuchar Paro Ad Buchar Shashivcha, Kol HaPechusim Buchar Paro, anyone that was Pachus, Kol HaPechusim Mebuchar Paro, V'chashuv Mebuchar Hashivcha Hiu Bechlal. These are the bookends of society. Paro is the king, his son is the most Choshuv, it's the heir apparent, and then there is the lowest of the low. The lowest of the low is the Bukhar of the Shifcha. Now, over here, Rashi appears to be contradicting himself. Okay, Rashi over here, it's not a contradiction, Rashi is saying a different dimension. He's saying over here that the reason, what did they do? What did they do? Why did they deserve to be punished? The first Rashi says they had to die, the Shvuyim, Kidei, Shlo Yoimru, Yirasam Tova. I mean, it's two different interpretations. It's two different dimensions. There's an element of truth of both, and Barash over here is telling us both. Because you'll ask, what did they do to deserve it? The answer is because they had joy. When the Shvuyim also hated the Jews. Everyone hates the Jews. And when they heard that the Jews were suffering, they had great pleasure, and therefore they deserved to die. Nachmo, kol ha-pchusim b'chor paro, anything was lower than the b'chor paro, v'chashim b'chor shivchoy b'chlal, v'lom alaku b'nei ha-shvachis, sha'afim hoyu m'shabdim b'chem. It says here more, they were m'shabdim b'chem, they enslaved them, u'smeichim b'tzorosam. Okay, next, v'chol b'chor b'heima, l'fi shachoyu oiv din lo. Oh, Mayor, you are correct. You see, it's referring to Rashi, that the Egyptians, they worshipped the animals, k'shachashbrachu nifra min u'ma nifra mei Eloheha. So you're saying you mamash hit the nail on the head? Okay, what you said is a beferish Rashi. Rashi says that the Egyptians worshipped the firstborn animal. Therefore Hashem punished their God. So the firstborn animal was an idol. Okay, so you got it right. How do you know that? You learned this Rashi before Meir. You learned...
I must have a good Rebbe.
Okay, you knew the Rashi. You knew the Rashi, see that? Okay, now let's see this.
Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi doesn't say that the firstborn animal.
It says it. You don't have the Rashi in front of you. It says, Lefi Shohoyu. I'm reading it. You probably don't have it in front of you. Lefi Shohoyu Oivdin Lo. Rashi says explicitly that they worshipped it. They worshipped the firstborn animal. The Dibra.
Well, we know they worshipped the sheep.
Oh.
But Hashem didn't kill the Bechor of the sheep.
He did.
Because the Yidden took the Bechor. Every Bechor, every Jew that took a Shepsalah, it was
already slaughtered. All of the sheep were already, at this moment in time, they were already slaughtered. They were already slaughtered because
they already made the carbon pesach.
Yes. So they were already slaughtered. So therefore, whatever was left over and the Egyptians had as the firstborn died. Every animal, not only when it comes to sheep, they worshipped all of the sheep. Every sheep was an idol, but when it came to other animals, they only worshipped the firstborn. I don't know. Like I said, Rashi over here is saying things. And if we lived in Egypt and we understood the society, we would understand. We would understand what this all means. It has to be that the whole history of Egypt, the first time the people start talking about it, Egyptology was 200 years ago, and until then no one knew nothing. Nothing. We're dealing over here with an event that took place 3,000 years ago. So we think that what they started digging up from 200 years ago is going to reveal the whole society of what took place 3,000 years ago? We got to be fools. There was a complex society that existed. I once saw a video, YouTube video, they showed some of the things they have in Egypt. And these stone utensils, and they do not know, no, not the pyramids. Forget about the pyramids, besides the pyramids. There are other things that they have there. They do not know today how they were made. They are made with, they're like these square and rectangular like utensils. They're very large basins. They are perfectly square to a degree that even today we can't, unless you're using million-dollar machines with precision lasers.
Right, the same with the pyramids. The angles are so perfect.
We do not know how they did it. Right. We don't know. And that's only in Egypt. They go all over the world. And I was in college 100 years ago. So I remember they showed us all things all over the world that we do not know how they did this. We don't know. You know, so even though they go to the tunnel tours. The tunnel tours are the Kaisel HaMaravi. So they show you how they built the Kaisel HaMaravi. They show you these color cartoons. It's baloney. Those color cartoons they show you inside the Kaisel, how they build the Kaisel with, it's total baloney. It's impossible. You try to reconstruct, they try to go and imitate them and take stones the size of the Kaisel and go use their pulleys and these things and try to go do what they did. No way. It's make-believe land. It's a cartoon. Fantasy, what they're showing you. The bottom line is, no one really knows how in the world they were able to build the Kaisel HaMaravi to transport these massive, massive stones with all these ideas of logs, and they roll them, and they have pulleys. Doesn't make it, the end of the day is, yeah, theoretically it all sounds fine and good, but halacha lemaisa, it wouldn't work. There's no way it would work. There's something that we do not know. It has to be like that. So here also, even forget about all the architectural things that they've done. Let's just talk about society. Society. What does this Rashi mean? Is that lefi shohoyu oivdin la? The Egyptians worshipped the firstborn animal. You never heard that before. Well, where does that come from? They worshipped the firstborn. Why the firstborn animal? Why? I thought they worshipped the Nile. What is going on over here? Then it talks about the Bechor HaShifcha.
They had a lot of religions.
That's too simple to say that. The stuff that's too simple is they had a lot of religions. The pantheon, the Greeks.
It is that, because I heard a lecturer say, you know, one of the Avodah Zarahs was the onion. They found a temple to the onion, and that's why they were Yidden in Mitzrayim.
To show that it's not an onion. Obviously, these things There's just we're just missing basic information. If someone would come today and go on a time machine and tell someone what America is like, and talk about smartphones, and talk about computers, and talk about technology, and the Democrats or Republicans, they say, "What in the world are you talking about? I don't understand one word." If you don't know the background, then it's total Greek. Rashi over here, there are two Rashis over here. Yeah, so when your children, they tell you, you read the Rashi, okay, fine. The Bukhar, there was the Bukhar of the Shavuya. They shouldn't say that it was their God that killed all the firstborns. That the Yerasim Tava El Bainam, their insult. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? What insult? What's the insult? What do you mean their Yerasim? Their God? What are you talking about? Okay, so you want to say, oh, they worship gods, and they were insulted because they were slaves, they were taken advantage of. Yeah, so you want to go say these things, and you're happy. And then what happens when you find out, and the reason why, because sometimes you have other things like this in Tanakh, and we fool ourselves and think we know what it means, and then one day there's a revelation of what it really means. And they discover something, and oh, that's what it means. Okay, this happens very often. There are a lot of things like that. And all of a sudden, what it says in Rashi, it just jumps off the page. Because if you understood the history, society, what was going on, oh, now you understand. I am suggesting, I have no idea, is that to really understand the depth of these two Rashis, we would need to go back and live in Egypt and understand the history, the story, the culture. And there's something a lot more going on over there that we don't know about, and it would explain this Rashi like with incredible insight. Okay, now let's see over the Targum. Targum on this Pasuk 5. Go to the resources over here. Targumim, Targum, Unkelis. Pasuk says, Vimus kol buchra be'abed mitzrayim mi buchra de paray. Now look what it says over here. Over here, the Targum is coming to add words. But it doesn't say the us. This is unkelis. This is not even the Targum Yonasan. If this is Targum Yonasan, yeah, of course. The Targum Yonasan tells you all these stories like a medrash. Unkelis doesn't do this type of stuff. The osid limitav al korse malchuse. Who heard that? It doesn't say anywhere that in the pasuk. Targum is bold. He's a very bold man, unkelis. He adds umeis kol chaver shayim habebuchar paro. Hayoshev al kiso. He says, not the Bukhar, that's the word Yoshev is in the past tense or the present tense. Present tense. Hayoshev. Yoshev. Ayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayayay Hayoyshev. That's the present tense. Hayoyshev. What does the Targum do? Targum says, don't chap me on dikduk. Don't chap me on dikduk. Present tense, past tense, future tense. It's all the same. I'll say whatever I want to say. Don't get me on this time. Don't confuse me with the facts. He says, the Bukhra de Pharaoh, de Osid, that is destined, limitav, to sit al Karsay Malchusay. Wow, that's quite an extreme thing to say and to blatantly violate the laws of grammar to say that we're referring over here to the Bukhara Pharaoh, who is the heir apparent. Hayoyshev, who is destined in the future to sit al Kiso, on his throne, to lead the country of a dynasty. So what does that mean exactly? You know what that means? Know what it seems to imply? You know, you see, again, you study it more and more. Now that we know Egyptology, okay, we read that book, and we learned that there are dynasties. There are dynasties in Egypt. What is a dynasty? How many dynasties are there? Well, according to them, I think there are 23. Oh, 30. I don't remember anymore. See, here, remember one week to the next. How many dynasties were there in Egypt until Egypt collapsed? The ancient Egypt collapsed. I think maybe 33. I think I'm trying maybe 33. Okay, and then we went through the book of Alexander Hull, who says Nishka Huygen, Nishka Fleugen. It's a bunch of baloney. There were no 33 dynasties. There were a lot less. They've padded to their history 1,000 years. that don't exist. And he shows with brilliance and expertise, Dvarim Nifloyim, there are no 33 dynasties. There's a lot less. But what is a dynasty? No one denies a dynasty is you have a king, and then the king dies. And who takes over? His son. And then that son dies. His son takes over. As long as there is a line, it's called the same dynasty. And then if there's a war or there are no children, whatever happens, the dynasty comes to an end. And then they will begin a new dynasty. So you know what this means over here? It means that if the heir apparent of Paro dies, that means the dynasty comes to an end. And that's a very big bezoyon to the country. When the dynasty, it's not just that, the king's firstborn died. If the king's firstborn died, in essence, that means it's not likely that this dynasty is going to continue. The next pharaoh will be the beginning of a new dynasty. So it's powerful stuff. Hashem is saying, I'm going to bring an end to this dynasty. And it's true. According to Alexander Hull, with the death of this melech, that was the end of the dynasty. After this guy, he only served for 1 year. This melech, Vayakam melech chodosh asher lo yoda es Yosef, he only served for 1 year. On record, even their records, there was a pharaoh that served for 1 year, and he's thoroughly convinced that that pharaoh that served for 1 year was the pharaoh of the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And even though the Goyim claim it, that couldn't be because it took place much later on. I don't remember the calculations. He says they don't know what they're talking about. They're making up a lot of things. He knows the calculation and he proves it. And that it makes all the sense. And with his death, that was the end of the dynasty. Okay, so this is a really great, a really important targum. Ad buchra de amso di bosar rechia, behind the recha. Now also, what is this nusach? What is this nusach? That was achar hore choyim, behind the millstone. Bechol buchar behema. So this, you go look in Pshuto Shul Mikra, they'll tell you what it means, no? Is now, I really don't understand, Meir, what was the problem with Shul Mikra? I still can't get it. A brother explained to me, but I still don't understand. All right, let me go look over here. We'll see in the book of chapter 11. Let me go to the Matsari. I'm going now to chapter 11. Chapter 11, verse 5. Chapter 11, verse 5. Let's see what it says over here. Chapter 11, verse 5. Umeis kol b'chor. Okay, here we go. The Osid. Okay, it says here in the Ma'at, sorry. B'chor paro einu yoshev al kisei ha-malchus achshav el osid l'shazolav. Ul ha-chik siv. Hu osid. Osid ha-medab al-oshin ho-yvim. U'deloi ke-adeh ha-bemechilta. Sh'b'chor paro ha-kman l'paro atzmai. V'chein perish rashi l'mikro l'kamon. All right, so he seems to be indicating that there is a machlokes in Rashi and Uncalus, and that is our goal, to find disagreements. Rashi later on, not in this passage, is going to say that the paro that was going to die, the paro didn't die though, was the bechor paro mi bechor paro. You can read this passage. Moshe is giving a prediction. This pasuk is not telling us what happened. Moshe over here is telling us a prediction. If you don't go, let us. I'm telling you now, is going to be makas mecharis umes. They will die. Kol b'chor b'yaretz. It's Moshe's words. These are Moshe's words. Mebechora, you paro. Paro, you paro, who are a b'chor, who sits al hayoshev al kisoy. You paro, you will die. Add all the way down to all the people on the lower rung of the social ladder, the Bechor Hashivcha Asher Achar Horichaim. I have no idea what that means. Asher Achar Horichaim. This means something very important, which I don't even possible for us to know what this means, the simple understanding, because we don't know what this means, this concept. So Rashi learns later on that Paro, Moshe was telling Paro, Paro, you're going to die. And Rashi later on says that when in the middle of the night, when people were dying, Paro said to Moshe, Moshe, pray for me. I'm also a Bukhar, I'm going to die. If they're all dying, I'm going to die. So I don't want to die. Pray for me. Unkelis says something very fascinating, is that Paro, maybe Paro was not a Bukhar. Okay, so if Paro was not a Bukhar, then he was not subject to this Makkah. So Paro himself had nothing to worry about. But Paro, what did he have to worry about? About his child, his firstborn child. So there's a very big nafkamina. Umeis kol b'chor, Moshe says to Paro, Umeis kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim, starting with you. You, Paro, who is a b'chor, who is currently in the Lashon Hoyve Hayoshev al Kiso, you, Paro, you will die. Or Paro is not Nichlal in this Makkah because Paro was not a firstborn. So Paro couldn't care less. But Paro has a child who is a firstborn, who is the heir apparent, and he will die. Umeis kol b'chor b'Yerushalayim mebuchar Paro, the firstborn of Paro. Hayoshev al kiso ad b'chor shivcha shachar ha'reichayim. Case is a very important targum, and that's what he says. Fine. Next, v'hoyisa, and there shall be. Okay, this is a very good example. Hoyisa is the past tense. When you put a vav in front of a word that's in the past tense, it transforms it to the future tense. And it will be. Hoyisa, it was. V'hoyisa, it will be. A tzaka, a cry. Gedoyla, b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. Asher, kamohu lo niyasa. Such a scream never happened. V'chamohu, and the like of which, Lois Soysif will never be again. Okay, this is a very hard pasuk. What did Rashi in this pasuk say? Nothing. Rashi did not want to tackle this. What did Targum say in this pasuk? Usehei tzivachto rabu, a great cry, b'chol aro de Mitzrayim, dichvosei, the like of which, lo havas, never happened. V'dich v'asei loy soy seif, and the like in this kind, loy soy seif will never happen. Loy soy seif will never happen again. Will never be again. Okay, will never be again. Such a cry will never happen again in the future. That's all he says. Okay, let's go now to the next passage. Ulechol b'nei Yisrael lo yechratz kelev l'shonai, and for all of the Jewish people, lo yechratz kelev l'shonai, he's predicting, even now. What is what yechratz? So in the English, it says the word snarl. Okay, is that others move it to wet his tongue, move his tongue. Okay, we like to translate the word yechratz means to bark. In this English, it's used the word snarl. What does snarl mean? I don't even know what it means. Snarl, whatever. It means something like to make noise. And let's say to wet his tongue. Okay, interesting translation. Not the way we are familiar. We translate this as to bark. Lemeish v'ad behema. A dog will not wet its tongue amongst towards the Jewish people. Not an ish, not a behema, not an animal that is owned by a Jew. Leman te du'un, so you shall know asher yafle, Hashem. Hashem differentiates bein Mitzrayim uvein Yisrael. The word yafle is a hard word. That Hashem makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. What does Rashi say? Rashi says, "V'yoduch levadecha." That's the wrong pasuk. Pasuk Zayin. Lo yechatzkev l'shoni oimer ani. Rashi says, "Shehu l'shon shinun, lo yishanein." What does the word yishanein mean? It means sharpening, to sharpen. Now, lo yechatz, to sharpen. Now, what does that mean? To sharpen. I'm not sure I understand. I don't know what this means. Oymen Yeshu Lashon Shinun means to sharpen. Lo yishanein. V'chei lo yichoratz levnei Yisrael l'ish es l'shonoi lo shinein. Oz techratz tishtanein. L'morak chorutz shonun. Machshavos chorutz odom chorif v'shonun. V'yad chorutzim tashir chalifim sachadim shinunim. He gives you many examples, and I don't even know what they mean. Let's see. Yafle, yafdil means to separate. Targum. ולכל בני ישראל לא יזנק כלבו בלשני. What is the word yanzeik? What does that word mean, yanzeik? So what is it over here in the English? Cause damage. Lashon of nezek. A dog will not damage, cause damage. Okay, back to Targum. Lo yanze kalba belishne leminbach. What's leminbach mean? Leminbach means to bark. Lime anoshavi ad bi'ira b'dil, so that sidun you shall know the afresh Hashem separates bein Misham bein Yisrael. English again. It says growl at a minor animal. Okay, now let's see what it says the Ma'atzari. This is very interesting. The Ma'atzari. He says the word yanzek, losh nezek. V'nimse gam losh nakosav einatzar shoyve b'nezek hamelech. Wow, look at that. Esther said to Achashverosh, the tzar does not concern about the nezek or the nezek hamelech. And that's the same word as yecheratz. Yecheratz is the damage. Let's see what's over here. Let me go back right over here, one more time over here. What's the place? Okay, wait one second. I lost the place. Here it is. Losh nezek v'dim segam losh nakos v'yin esu shodim v'ezek ha-melech. Mila zuhu biyur al yechratz v'chein im segam tag mezun ozil. The loiker adak shepeir shechratz l'shoin tenu in movement. Lo yonua b'lishne, to move its tongue. L'minbach l'minbach means to bark. B'lishoin ha-akvon ha-shakel v'lo yazik will not damage. Afilu bin v'chusof. Tirgim kilu losh nakasa b'lashaynai tirgim l'fisid hamilim shemikur v'vosayt hoistav ankulis hamil l'mbach l'farish hakavana the afresh yavdil. Alright, so what does it mean l'shanein? She means to sharpen. You see, here's an example where we don't even realize how we have been influenced by the Targum. We live in a generation today where most people don't pay any attention to the Targum. Article declared war against the Targum. When Article wrote their Chumash, they said we're going to translate the Chumash according to Rashi. Okay, that's what Article they wrote in their commentary. We're going to translate the Chumash first of its kind. We're going to be loyal to Rashi. I don't have in front of me an Article Chumash. I have to see how this will be a very good example to see. Maybe I should do that. Which I'll finish over there. I should go see. I'll go get an Arshul Chumash over here. I'm very curious to see what it is over here. Arshul declared war against Targum. We're going to translate the Chumash like according to Rashi. Ask the average person and challenge you to stop anyone on the street and ask them, translate for me the words Lo Yecheratz Kelev Lishoinai. I'm willing to put money on the table. I'm willing to bet Mayor Appeldorf money that you stop any person on the street and you ask them to translate the words Lo Yecheratz Kelev Lishoinai, they will tell you no dog barked. They will translate the word Yecheratz to mean bark. Who says that the word Yecheratz means to bark? Unkelis. Not Rashi. Rashi, there's no mention of barking. Rashi says it means Lishanein, to sharpen. Now, what does it mean to sharpen? I don't know what it means to sharpen. How does a dog will not sharpen its tongue? What does that mean, to sharpen its tongue? I really don't know. Rashi gave 10 examples of the word Yecheratz is translated to be sharp. A chorif. But the word sharp has nothing to do with the word bark. The one who said it means bark is Unkelis. He said the word Yecheratz means nezek. And then he adds, what kind of nezek? Because sometimes when a dog barks, it scares people. That's called damage, psychological damage. A woman can have a miscarriage. Chazal say a woman has a miscarriage. If a woman hears a dog bark, it's a sakad. It can cause her the pachad, can cause the fetus to abort. So it is Unkelis that translates what Yecheratz to mean to bark, and that has won the day amongst all of the Jewish people. Not like what it says in Rashi. Okay, so let's chazal this. Then we're going to see what it says in the Arzul Chumash. Okay. Let's go back to the pasuk. So Nachmol the Chazber who the Rashi. Rashi says Oimer Ani Shulashoin Shinun. It means sharpness. Lo Yishanein. And he gives over here many examples. Targum. What Ilchob Lo Yan Zeik. The word Yechratz means to damage. It's an unusual word. Kalba will not damage Belishna. How will it not damage? He adds in Belishna. He adds in a word that it does not say. Leminbach. It doesn't say that word in the Pasuk. He already translated the word Yechratz to mean damage. And then he adds in to damage them by barking. Lemei anoshov yad bi'ira b'dil. So that's the sedun, the yafresh, Hashem Hashem separates. Okay, so give me 1 second. I'm getting over an art school English Chumash. Give me 1 second, please. Okay, here I got it. Here we go. We're going to chapter 11, verse 7. Okay, here we go. This is going to be the big test. Chapter 11, verse 7. But against all the children of Israel, no dog shall wet its tongue. Not bad. Not bad. They are loyal to their war. Shall wet its tongue against neither man nor beast. Wet its tongue. Very interesting. Wet its tongue. Now, let's see what it says over here in the commentary. Commentary. They don't have any commentary on this. Okay. All right, so I don't know what that means exactly. I don't know what it means to wet its tongue. Sharp, it means to wet? I guess so. I guess when the tongue, you want it to be active, you need it to wet it. So that in the context of the dog, that's called sharpening it. In the English translation over here, it says, meaning no dog shall wet its tongue. Sharpening. Sharpening in the context of a dog means to wet its tongue. All right? Not bad. Our school got it right. They are true to their word, at least in this context. Okay, if open up the Stone Edition, the first page, I'll read to you. The first page of the Stone Edition in the Hatama to the Stone Edition. Let's see what's over here. Translation. See what is it over here? The new translation, this volume, attempts to render the text as our sages understood it. Okay, where there are different interpretations, we follow Rashi, the father of commentators, because the study of Chumash has been synonymous with Chumash Rashi for 9 centuries. As the Ramban says in his introduction, Loi Mishpat HaBechoira, to him belongs the right of the firstborn. In the translation, we attempt to follow the Hebrew as closely as possible to avoid paraphrase, but occasionally English syntax or idiom forces us to deviate somewhat. All right. So you see, I have to really apologize because they write over here, they attempt. They don't say they're going to be perfect. They say, Nochamol, it says over here, where there are differing interpretations, we follow Rashi. Because, they say word attempt. Now, all it says is attempt to render the text as our sages understood it. All right, so here they were true to their word. Over here, there's a machlokes Rashi and their uncles, and they did talk and attempt. All right. Rabbi Sai, thank you very much for coming along with me. This means a lot to me to say there. Thank you for coming. Have a good night, everyone. Zay gezunt. Good night. Good night, Hashi. Good night, Mr. and Mrs. Glatter. It's always nice to see you. Mayor Appledorf, what's with Tamari? Speak to her today.
How are you? Yeah.
What does Tamari have to say today?
I didn't see you today.